Support for The Front Porch comes from WVCarFinder.com, matching West Virginia cars to West Virginians who want to buy them. It's a service of the Charleston Gazette Mail. More at WVCarFinder.com. And you're on The Front Porch. Some people want to bring the coal industry back, but a new survey says that a majority of people here in coal country say it's time to focus on diversification. And an interview with Bill Cole, the GOP gubernatorial candidate. I'm Scott Finn, along with Lori Lynn and Rick Wilson. Hey, guys, how you doing?
Hey, Scott.
All right, let's start with that quote from Bill Cole. He sat down recently for an extended interview with West Virginia Public Broadcasting's Ashton Mara. You can hear it on her excellent new podcast. It's called Viewpoint, available wherever you find fine podcasts. She asked Cole a really interesting question about transition to a more diversified economy.
Does your focus on revitalizing the coal industry hinder the state from diversifying its economy?
Absolutely not. Listen, I'm always going to be out in front of supporting our fossil fuel industries, both our natural gas, oil, as well as coal. Listen, those are God-given resources that he chose to put under the ground of the state of West Virginia, and it'd be crazy to turn my back on that. But diversification is critically important. And I want a broad economy, but the fossil fuels, our natural gas and our coal industries, are what can move West Virginia just from good to great.
So that's Senate President Bill Cole talking to Ashton Mara from West Virginia Public Broadcasting. I listened to that, and what I hear him say is, look, it's not a choice between one or the other. I also hear him saying really loudly, though, he's going to spend significant energy and time on trying to support the coal industry.
I think that's right. And, you know, I agree with him in the sense that they're two different things. They're two functions, and government is capable of doing both at the same time. So, yeah, to me, it's completely legitimate. It makes total sense to do both.
A governor can walk and chew gum at the same time,
exactly.
Basically. You can support the coal industry and fight for that on one hand and still work on diversification in the other. What do you think, Rick? Is there an opportunity cost from focusing too much on the coal industry?
I think if you obsess about it, that's probably true. But I think there's agreement that it's not either or. I was at a forum in Huntington a couple weeks ago. One of the most conservative legislators talked about how we failed for the last 100 years to diversify our economy. So I think that's one thing there's large-scale agreement on.
Later in the interview, and you should all listen to it on Viewpoint, Cole talks a little bit about what he thinks the problem is with why we haven't diversified, and says that the longtime rule of Democrats in the state is one of the reasons why we haven't diversified the economy. His answer is a combination of a reduction of regulations and the size of state government as well. You like that, Rick, don't you?
Love it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this survey. The survey was done by the Sierra Club and by the West Virginia Center for Budget and Policy. You know, center-left, left-leaning groups. You could dismiss it because of that. But I would argue, you know, I think it's worth talking about, in part because it's also been done by Public Opinion Strategies. It's well-respected. It's worked for Shelley Moore Capito and a lot of other Republicans. So, and it asks the question right off the bat, do you think elected officials and decision makers in your state should prioritize on either one, assisting rural coal mining areas to attract new employers, diversify the economy, and ensure workers get new jobs in growing industries? Or two, fighting government regulations that have made it harder to produce coal to ensure that good-paying jobs in mining come back? The people who live in coal mining states in the East said the focus ought to be on diversification, not fighting regulations. 62% to 32%, even in West Virginia, 54% said the focus should be on diversification, and 44% said fighting regulations.
I think the way that it's phrased is so clearly weighted on one side. I think it's kind of amazing that 44% came out the other way. That's to me, that's the takeaway from that question.
Get new jobs in growing industries, right? I mean, that's kind of weighted language, isn't it? Still, this does say to me that there is a large number of people in West Virginia that are ready to prioritize diversification over trying to revive the coal industry.
I think you might win the so-called war against regulation and still not have anything to do a victory lap about. The other thing, there's a whole interesting point that's raised by this. If you're going to commission a poll, do you want to commission a friendly group to do it that's going to tell you what you want to hear, or do you want to commission a group that will tell you the best available intelligence? It's like you don't want a spy to give you your own propaganda back. You know what I mean?
The survey is about the Reclaim Act. And the Reclaim Act is a proposal in Congress right now that would use money that's been set aside, the Abandoned Mine Land Fund. It's investing $1 billion back in coalfield communities. Unsurprisingly, when you ask people, do you want the federal government to spend lots and lots of money in your community in West Virginia and other places, they said, yes, we would love
90%. That. 90%. Imagine that.
Imagine that. Although there was some skepticism, and more so in West Virginia, around whether or not it would happen or whether it would do what it says it's supposed to do.
So this is a bill that Evan Jenkins, Republican congressman, is a big supporter of, and there are quite a few others. So, it's again, it's not a partisan thing.
Why, if it's just so popular, why hasn't it happened yet?
I think part of it is there are probably coal states in the West that have their own ideas about what to do with this.
So there's a fight about which region gets to use this money. When you look at who's running for president, Trump talks about bringing the industry back and getting the jobs back. Hillary Clinton talks about using federal money to help retrain miners or reclaim land. Do you think, Lori, that people react to that sort of proposal like it's charity or like it's some sort of government program?
Yeah, I think probably less that it's charity and more that it's a government program. You know, it includes kind of BS type phrases like reinvesting in communities. And I think people hear something like that, economic revitalization, and just, you know, how is that going to help me? Is that going to give me a job? Is that really, I think it's very hard for people, and probably rightly so, to wrap their minds around how that's actually going to affect their life. It sounds, here's what it sounds like to me in the abstract. It sounds like they're going to take mines and turn them into parks, which, sure, that sounds good. And I would, you know, vote yes on that or answer yes on that to a survey. But do I really think that's going to change my life? It's not really that big of a thing, I think. And you know, I think that's kind of reflected in the survey. Like, sure, yeah, it sounds great, but it's not a game changer.
There's skepticism, some skepticism about whether or not it's really going to work the way people say it's going to work, whether people really get reemployed. It seems like it's part of that sort of anti-federal view you see a lot of now, which just says the federal government can't do anything good for our lives. And it's at best ineffective and at worst destroys jobs, Rick.
That kind of message often comes from people who don't believe government can do anything and are determined to prove it by their actions. But coal's done a lot of damage in these areas, and there are infrastructure needs. So I think this could be a real employment benefit for a while.
There is widespread support for both the idea of employing miners and cleaning up, especially like polluted streams and pollution coming off of mines. You know, there's the Miner Act as well, which is a different proposal. They're looking to tap into the same funding sources in order to help make sure that a lot of underfunded pension plans for union miners can be, you know, can be funded, and that their health benefits also can be funded. Rick, one of the criticisms of that is that why, you know, there are lots of workers throughout the years when their companies have gone bankrupt, they've lost these pension and health benefits. Why should miners be treated any differently?
I mean, I think it's important to keep the promises made to working people. And what I think is interesting is that in the Senate, it was bottled up for a long time. But once again, there's bipartisan support for that. I think Shelley Moore Capito is a big supporter. After being held up by Mitch McConnell from Kentucky for a long time, it seems to be moving.
But what is McConnell's objection? He's from a coal state. What, I mean,
the speculation was that he had a beef against the United Mine Workers.
Yeah.
They supported his opponent last time around, and so it got held up. But one thing really that could happen here is there's one bill that's moving the Senate, one in the House. They're both different. People might be invested in one or the other. So one thing I'm concerned about is, you know, will neither one of them happen? I think they both have merits. I don't know if it's possible for them both to pass. I know the United Mine Workers supports both, but they see more urgency in the Miners Protection Act.
Maybe it's just inertia. Congress isn't getting a lot done on anything.
Well, and especially right now. You know, we have an election, 60 days away, less than that. I think once we have a new president in the spring, and that's, you know, the first year of a presidency is traditionally when things happen. It's kind of sad to say, but if it moves, I would expect it to be next year, next spring or summer.
One bright spot in the whole political climate is at least one presidential candidate has the moral courage to raise the issue of overweight pageant contestants. So,
which one was that?
I can't remember right now. I have to look that one up.
Well, hey, okay, speaking of Trump and Clinton, another thing that came up in Ashton Maher's interview of Bill Cole, who's running for governor on the GOP side, kind of like what's going on with these polls that show Cole running behind Jim Justice, the billionaire Democratic candidate, despite the fact that Cole's a Republican, Donald Trump is hugely popular here. What's going on? And part of it, he says in this interview, is around just people not knowing who he is and what he does.
I look forward to the two debates because I do believe that that'll give voters an opportunity to see what, you know, see the contrast in the candidates and what our plan is to move West Virginia forward to where she should be instead of where we find ourselves now. I think the debates will be greatly helpful in that. But listen, I'm working every single day. I'm all over the state. I'm in the Eastern Panhandle, the Northern Panhandle, you know, North Central. I'm just trying to get in front of as many people as I can between now and Election Day. I think that is what the difference maker will be, in my opinion.
What does Cole have to do to break out of this? And there's a debate coming up. What do you expect Cole to try to do to be able to be well known? Lori, what do you think?
Yeah, it is ironic. He's seen, I think, more as the establishment type of guy. And that's fair. He has been the president of the West Virginia Senate, but he's only been in office for about a little over 4 years. I think he took someone's unexpired term and then was reelected himself. And, you know, a successful businessman, that's really what he's done with his life. He's not a, you know, career politician. What he needs to do is take the gloves off a little bit and not seem so political. You know, I think for Hillary Clinton, she did well by herself by seeming, you know, very mainstream and kind of highlighting the difference between her and Trump's kind of brand of craziness. But I think what Cole would do well to do is take the gloves off a little bit, not seem so Senate president, because Jim Justice certainly isn't. He's going to be folksy and hey guys. And so, it will be interesting to see how it plays out, because that's not really Cole's natural style. I think he does have a more, you know, buttoned up kind of staid presence. We'll see.
He's knocked Justice off his pedestal just a little bit too, doesn't he?
Except it's not a pedestal because they'll be sitting down, as we know.
Yes, exactly.
Good thing we covered that last week.
Rick, what do you think Jim Justice needs to do in this debate?
Well, the main thing is not to make a mistake, as we've seen in the past. One thing, going back to Cole, I think it's interesting when he became Senate president, you know, you had a choice. You could try to govern in a way that didn't burn bridges with a lot of constituencies and groups. And they seemed instead that, you know, they have not had the majority for a long time, so they really ran with it. And that creates some political opposition that might not have been there had they taken a more cautious approach.
Bill Cole got things done. They were historic things around right to work and prevailing wage. But you're going to hurt some feelings and you're going to make some people upset when you do those things.
On the other hand, I think Justice's problem with his base is that you have, you know, this other candidate, Charlotte Pritt, with the Mountain Party candidate, who is, I think, going to be pretty attractive to some people who are very progressive and who look at Justice and they wait, this guy was a Republican in January of 2015, and now he's the standard bearer for my party. You know, I'm not feeling so good about that.
Watch the debate here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. It is going to be at 7 o'clock on Tuesday. You do not want to miss it. All right, hey, let's do our Bible verse of the week. I have it this week.
Knock yourself out.
Sorry,
dude.
Rick.
It's all good.
All right, man. I know
you're about sharing the wealth, Lori.
Do I have to do one next week?
You should.
Okay. Yeah.
This is from the Gospel of Luke, okay, and it's the widow's mite. Jesus looked up and saw the rich putting their gifts into the treasury, and he saw also a certain poor widow putting in two mites. So he said, "Truly I say to you, that this poor widow has put in more than all, for all these out of their abundance have put in their offerings to God. But she out of her poverty put in all the livelihood that she had." I've been thinking a lot about people giving to West Virginia Public Broadcasting during a pledge drive, for example, and this idea that, you know, for some, they give out of their need. A lot of West Virginians do that. They're very generous, especially to the church context.
I think that's true of philanthropy in general. There's more generosity among people with lower incomes. There's probably more empathy, too, according to a lot of research.
Yeah, that's right. There is, actually. I had a conversation with a friend of mine about the meaning of this, and he said there's a radical version you'd like this that says that Jesus wasn't really praising the woman, that really what Jesus was saying is the woman shouldn't be given anything. That's embarrassing that she's even having to give anything. You all, rich people, should be taking care of her. Whereas I think there's another point of view that's kind of a more conservative point of view that says, no, everybody should contribute.
I think he was skeptical of the whole temple system, and he was acknowledging the generosity of the woman. But you know, the whole idea that you had to be mediated by temple, it's one reason why he kicked over tables when he got there during his last week.
Isn't the temple the government?
The temple was more than that. It was a whole center where everything came together. It was also a point of contention because, you know, the Roman army came in at certain times during the holidays, and there was always a chance of things exploding. So
Jesus never really talked about we need to have more Roman intervention in our lives. I mean, he did say, like, oh, yeah, give them their taxes. But he wasn't really spending a lot of energy on that, Rick.
He was going to do an indirect things more than he wasn't about confronting Rome militarily. That's what the whole Barabbas story is about.
I know. I feel
that
like
didn't work out very well, let's just say.
I don't know if I can just summarize all four Gospels, but I do find it interesting. It's like Jesus was all about direct action, right? He wasn't about let's have collective action to overthrow the Roman government, or let's have collective action to convince the Romans to change their rules. It's all about, like, you give food, you give money, you take care of people.
I think wherever he went, people sort of shared what they had, and people who were considered unclean because they were sick were brought back into it. And it was sort of like it's been compared to a peasant revitalization movement where you're going from place to place and opening yourself up to hospitality and things like that.
Speaking of small donors, I think it's interesting and really unexpected, at least to me, that Trump has broken records of small donations. Did not expect that, but apparently that it is true.
And Bernie Sanders before that, right. And Barack Obama before that. And it's interesting, this whole idea, I think people were so worried that big money would take over the entire system and that small money is countering it.
Right. The big banks are donating to Hillary Clinton while she rails against them.
Is there anything else anyone wants to say about Trump, Clinton, coal, justice, and the economic transition away from COAL, coal?
I don't think enough attention has been paid to just the names in this election. I mean, I feel like the national media has yet to sit up and notice that we have someone named Coal in West Virginia running against someone named Justice. It's pretty amazing.
There was one article about the weirdest. Did you see it? The weirdest.
The Politico, yeah.
Yeah, the weirdest election in the country or something. But yeah.
It didn't really go into the names, which I think it's just a neat thing. Friends of Coal.
And that's the Front Porch for this week. That was Lori Lynn, and we're also joined by Rick Wilson. Thanks for listening. So you've been listening to The Front Porch for in-depth conversations about politics, culture, and history. But have you subscribed to our podcast yet? You can find our Front Porch podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud, just about anywhere you find podcasts. Subscribe to The Front Porch, and you'll hear more of Lori's analysis, more of Rick's jokes and Bible verses. I guess he does some analysis, too. You can listen to The Front Porch podcast on your own time. Skip the parts you don't like. Rewind and listen to me and the other parts that you do like. While you're subscribing to our podcast, leave a review. It helps us reach even more people. You can find West Virginia Public Broadcasting's other great podcasts while you're there. Mountain Stage, Viewpoint, Inside Appalachia, just to name a few. Thanks.